Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the CollectingCars.com podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Collecting Cars podcast live from Goodwood. We're at the fantastic revival meeting. I'm Sam Hancock. Chris and Ed are away this weekend, so they've asked me to step in and dive around the paddock and the men's changing rooms here at the revival to grab as many interviews as I can with the fast and famous superstars of the sport that are participating at this incredible historic race weekend. Right, I suspect a lot of you who are listeners to this podcast probably fall down an automotive YouTube hole on a regular basis, in which case you will almost certainly have come across Seen Through Glass, and in which case you will have almost certainly come across the man standing next to me here in the assembly area at Goodwood, Philip Kaduri. Phil, what are you driving? How are you going?
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm going very, very well, thank you. I'm driving a Cobra. Most people may not recognize my voice, but if they heard my cackle, they might recognize yeah, that.
This is true. Normally the cackle is to be heard whilst he's guiding his Tuthill-built Porsche 911 safari car through some kind of forest track that's probably illegal. You're probably not supposed to be doing the things you're doing up above the quail.
Yeah, no comment, actually.
If you've not seen this, definitely look it up. What do they need to search for on YouTube?
Seen Through Glass, okay. My friend Phil, Safari 911.
I really recommend that to, well, basically anyone who's into cars, to be honest. It's a good watch. Let's talk a little bit about that car, because I think you've probably done more for Tuthill build Safari, sort of, you know, rally spec Porsches than anyone. Tell me, why did you buy that and why the livery?
Well, I mean, the story of the car started when I bought my Stratos and I did the Tour Auto in it. I realized very quickly that what I wanted to do were some of the best events in the world, and I came across the East Africa Safari Classic. Through that I found Tuthill, and I knew that I wanted to do the event in one of his cars. But when everyone builds to the same spec, it's really nice to differentiate yourself. And I looked at the Porsche back catalogue and I thought, there's so many cool liveries. It would be great to adapt one to an older car. Yeah. And so we found the Jaeger GT1 that was run by Zach Speed. And I thought, this would be really cool if we could translate it.
I thought it was a really good choice because it's so distinctive. For anyone listening that's not sure on what it is, it's essentially a lovely shade of green, but then with a white and red striped roof, which became very iconic in modern sports car racing. And that's what surprised me. This isn't a sort of a rally livery that you've adopted. It's very much from an entirely different discipline of the sport, but it really works on your car.
Well, thank you. I think so too. And I think they were very pleased when I said I wanted to paint the whole car rather than do a rally wrap. And it's great. It's peppered now. You know, we've really used that car. I've rolled it over by accident. And
how many times have you rolled it?
Only once. Only once. We fixed it pretty quickly. But it's nice. It's peppered. It's a rally car. It's used. It's the way it should be.
Now you are, I would say, among the more enthusiastic drivers that I know. Not afraid to test the limits of any car he's driving. I have witnessed the Stratos parked at a very unlikely angle, looking at the sky rather than the road ahead on the Modena Centro Oro on a special stage just a few months ago. You just heard that Phil's Porsche 911 Safari car has ended up upside down. And yesterday, you really threw me under the bus, actually, but I returned the favour because I was commentating on the TT first qualifying session, and I think I said something like, now, given Phil's immense amount of seat time driving rally type cars on loose ground, watch this man in his Cobra because he's got fantastic car control. At which point the silver Cobra comes out of Ford water, broadside, rear tires smoking, utterly refusing to lift. But therein lay the problem, because the next thing I know, you're spinning like a top into the field. Into
I was
the weeds.
Told it was a very light lift at Ford water. Maybe it was slightly too light. But,
so we need to have a word with your driver coach, Dan Wells.
Dan is here, who was in the Stratos with me at the Centauri when we went off. I blame that squarely on him.
I know. I'm glad you're consistent on that, because when I challenged you for the reason for your spectacular off that day, you did immediately blame the driver coach next to you.
Well, when you're pushing with a navigator on board and you're listening to those calls, that's what you're trying to do. Yeah. And we made one missed call, and that's what happened. But we went out the next day and won a stage outright by about 5 seconds. Yeah. And then we won the last stage of the rally too. So we did pretty well.
Well, you to me are the perfect example, the poster boy of somebody coming into racing, taking it seriously, but finding that balance between needing to take it seriously and studiously enough. You've got a coach with you all of the time. You seem to cherry pick great events, so your calendar must be just brilliant fun. You know, you're not at Snetterton on a rainy, cold day in a porter cabin going around a reasonably bland circuit. I mean, you're going from epic event to epic event.
I've been very, very fortunate so far. I've just started. I found Dan to be my driver coach. Being based in Hong Kong, I'm flying to events anyway. I don't get to come to the UK or the US very often, so I miss some of those events. I was recommended by a mutual friend, Marino Franchitti, to get experience in modern cars so that when I made those early mistakes that you do in racing, I was protected.
Ah, interesting.
Okay. And then I've been very, very lucky. I was brought in by another friend who's been on your podcast, David Clark, and he gave me my first experience here in a 9046, which I had a great time
that
in.
That was last year, I think.
That was at the members' meeting earlier this year.
Oh, wow, really recent.
And so this is then still he helped new... me buy a Cobra, and here I am.
Of course he did. Of course Clarky helped you buy a Cobra. Classic. It was worthwhile giving you that seat to drive after all.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic. Look, thank you very much. Best of luck in this next qualifying session, and have fun.
Thanks very much. No rally driving this
time. No rally driving. Okay, we're here in the Drivers Club, and Karun Chandok has just kindly made me a cup of tea. You've just come off the circuit, haven't you?
Yeah, I was in the St. Mary's Trophy in a Ford Zodiac, but the gear lever came off in my hand halfway through the race.
You'd think that gear levers coming off in a driver's hand is massively unusual. That's the third time I've heard that tale today. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there you go. But I only did about 5 or 6 laps.
What car were you in?
In a Ford Zodiac with Theo Pafitis. So, yeah, it was quite good fun. It's a big old boat, missing about, I don't know, 100 horsepower. But, yeah, it was good fun.
The St. Mary's Trophy is a race I've only done once before, and I wasn't in a particularly competitive car, but I can think of few races that have ever had me laughing out loud in my crash helmet for lap after lap. It's just brilliant fun.
It's the most fun of the lot because the cars aren't scary. Yep. You know, I think when you start getting to the TT and the Cynrata and things like that, then the cars become really a bit animalistic, really. Yeah.
Speaking of hairy cars, talk to me about this Can-Am McLaren beast, which haven't you in the past set a new track record in that?
I did last year. I don't know if it's a track record, but I had fastest lap last year and then went a bit quicker again this year. So,
wow.
It's not often I'm told that you see a sub 1:20 lap.
What was the lap time?
I had a 19.9 yesterday.
Fantastic. And I think the circuit's a little bit off this week because it's hot.
Yeah.
I think it's a touch slower than it has been in the
exactly.
past.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was more potential in it, but I was very happy to park the car at that point and save it for the race. So, yeah, I'm driving it's a McLaren M1A. It's actually the same car I drove last year, but I haven't seen it since last year, to be honest.
Okay.
And it was a little bit confusing yesterday because I drove an AC Cobra for qualifying the TT and literally walked with my helmet on, got in the McLaren and went out.
Right.
And so the first lap, it was sort of remembering which side the gear lever is and remembering, you know, how different each car is.
How do you do that? Do you have any little routines or any processes that you run through just to dial your head into the car that you're getting into?
Not really. I think I just build up to it. You know, there's no point going out there and trying to nail a lap on lap one. Yeah. I just build into a rhythm. And, you know, the human brain is an amazing thing. It adjusts and adapts. And some people can adapt better than others. But I've been lucky to do so.
I can hardly think of three more different cars for you to be dashing in between. And for those who are not familiar with the way that Goodwood works, it's not the case that you come and you qualify and race in one car and then you conveniently move on to the next before the final one. You're very much jumping in and out, backwards and forwards, in all three different cars.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is a great challenge, but I think that's part of the fun of coming to events like this, is to experience and drive different cars. And and also, it gives us an appreciation of what the history of our sport is. We're very lucky to have a rich history in our sport. There's not many sports or industries or businesses that have the history we have in motor racing. And I think it's nice to come and pay our respects to it and appreciate it.
And like obviously, like so many other drivers here, you very much come from a single-seater, well, eventually a sports car background as well, but very much modern machinery, Formula One included. But I've seen you at a lot of historic events, particularly the Goodwoods, and you're involved with Williams Heritage now. So are you a student of the sport's history? Is this something that you've recently come to, or have you always been into the historical side?
No, I've always been a fan of the history of the sport. You know, I think ever since I was a kid, I was just obsessed with the sport. Right. And then I read up more and more and watched more and more, I suppose at that time it was VHS tapes. And What was tricky was I grew up in India. I only moved to England in 2002 to race at Formula 3. So I lived in India before that. And obviously at the time, I think it was until 93, we didn't have Formula 1 on television. Wow. We would get Autosports delivered probably 10 weeks late. You know, so I'd read about the British Grand Prix in September and things like that. We had friends of ours in England who would send us VHS tapes of races recorded, and I just watch them again and again and again.
Fantastic.
But everything was obviously, you know, 3 months later than you guys are watching it here.
Yeah.
But I just grew to love the sport and grew to love various aspects of the sport, mainly Formula One.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that was my first love. But as time passed, I grew to appreciate sports car racing and other bits and pieces.
But obviously, you're still very much immersed in the Formula One scene in the paddock. You're very much a household name in your role as a commentator, as a pundit, as our pit lane reporter. And you always seem to be having fun. You always seem to be doing a really professional, very insightful job and have taken to it like a duck to water. But does it frustrate you not being behind the wheel?
Of course it does. You know, the part that I miss most about Formula One is the driving. I don't miss the politics. I don't miss the nonsense that happens around it, which is exhausting. But of course I miss the driving because they are ultimately the best cars on the planet. Yeah. But I've learned to accept that in life, you know, your life takes you in different paths. Yeah. So you just got to make the most of what cars have been dealt to you.
And of course, you're a dad now, so you've already lost at least half a second there.
Well, I'm not sure, actually. It's funny, people have various theories on this, but I remember talking to Barrichello about it back then, and he said, nah, it didn't affect him at all. And I think it's true. I think, you know, different people just react in different ways. I'm not driving around there, even here at a weekend like Goodwood, thinking, you know, about the danger of the sport or about kids or anything. You just get on with it. I'm lucky now that I've driven in various single-seaters, in, as you say, up to Formula One, in sports cars, Formula E, and now with Williams, I get to do lots of different driving with some very cool cars.
Let's talk about that. So Williams Heritage, this fantastic new-ish division that the Williams Formula One team have created, basically dusting off the cars that I guess have been quietly sitting in the warehouse or in the museum. and getting them ready to race, making them available, some of them available to gentlemen drivers, to collectors, but not just to go and sit in another dusty warehouse, but actually to be used. And you're very much involved in that. Tell us about the Heritage Program.
So Jonathan Williams, who's Sir Frank's son, of course, and I have been friends for many years, and we both share a very strong passion for the sport and the history of the sport. And I think it saddened us to see cars just collecting dust. And Johnny was very, very instrumental in pushing the group, really, to open up this heritage division. And, you know, we've seen what Ferrari have done with the Cliente business, which is fantastic. And we will never be Ferrari Cliente because they own engines and build engines, whereas we, as Williams Heritage, rely on Renault, BMW, Honda, you know, different partners that Williams have had over the years. So, but we're building cars up, we're selling cars, we're running cars, most importantly. We're organizing track days, so we've been to Jerez, we've been to Silverstone, we're going to go to America next year. We've got clients with a whole range of cars from, you know, Alan Jones FW07s and 8s to Nigel Mansell's Active Suspension 14B, Damon Hill's championship winner. We've got a fantastic roster of cars. And, you know, Williams had a catalogue of over 110 rolling chassis, which were just lying in a warehouse. And wow, we've now started building them up and running them. And it's great to see them out on track. For me, it's great to test drive and shake them down.
Well, I was just going to ask you about that because, of course, you are the guy that gets the phone call when one of these heritage cars needs to be given a shakedown or tested. Perhaps you get involved in running them at some of the private client days as well. What was it like to drive Nigel Mansell's Red 5 with all the active?
I think emotionally it was very, very special. I'm not a particularly emotional person when it comes to racing. You know, I never call the cars by names or anything like that. For me, they're machines or they're pieces of engineering brilliance. But driving Nigel's car, I got to drive it at the British Grand Prix weekend a couple of years ago after qualifying when the crowd was still there, and again on Sunday morning, you know, British Grand Prix, Sunday morning, full crowd, and you're driving Red 5.
Wow.
And the crowd were on their feet cheering. It was amazing. And to me, it just brought
back... No pressure then.
Well, yeah, but it just brought back the memories of, as a kid, growing... Because that's the era I grew up watching, was, you know, Senna, Prost, Mansell, Piquet.
Yeah.
They were my heroes. And I remember watching that 92 British Grand Prix, albeit 3 months later, of course. But seeing the crowd go onto the track and basically carry Nigel to the podium, and then to be driving down Hangar Straight with a crowd all around heading towards Stowe Corner, it was a really emotional moment. And as I said, I'm not a particularly emotional person, but that was special.
Have you had the chance to drive that car somewhere private with less onlookers where you can sort of throw it around a little bit? Have you
I was lucky at Silverstone. I got to have a go as well. The team were quite keen for me to push and really experience it, which is nice. And then I drove it at Jerez as well with a client there. And it is so special. You know, you think the car was built in 1992. And actually, I've just seen Adrian Newey walk past, who was one of the architects behind
the car.
Oh,
we'll have to grab him in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he was one of the chief architects behind the success of that car. It's so iconic, especially in the UK, I think, you know, Mansell, Red 5, winning all those races.
And is all of the active suspension, the really technical stuff that required an army of mechanics in period, is that still working or is that disabled?
No, it all works, 100%. We were very lucky that we worked with Judd on the engine and Cosworth Electronics, and Cosworth produced a new ECU, a new wiring loom, and got the full active working. So all the switches in the cockpit work. You can make adjustments for the different corners.
Do you feel the car lifting up and down?
Yeah, absolutely. Really? You know, you feel... It's the only car, or it's one of those rare cars I've driven, which is faultless.
Okay.
The only limitation is literally the level of grip that the tyre offers you. And at some point, the tyre loses... That's physics. It loses grip.
Yeah.
But the car is just perfect. It looks perfect. It sounds perfect. It feels amazing to drive.
Wow.
And the active just, you know, do you think Nigel on occasions was 2.5 seconds ahead of Senna in qualifying? Oh. And, you know, Senna's arguably the greatest qualifier in F1 history.
Yeah.
That tells you how dominant that car was.
Yeah. Absolutely astonishing. Now, that was 1992, I guess, that car. So you've driven some of the later cars, and the Heritage Department even has some of the BMW-powered cars from the mid-noughties.
Yes.
Have you driven those as well?
Yeah.
How do they all compare?
Sure, I drove the 2004 Montoya car, which was, if I talk about pure performance, that's got to be the best car I've ever driven. I mean, I've driven the hybrids, the 2017 car, so I've driven a more, you know, quite a modern car as well. But 2004, to me, in many ways, is the peak of Formula One performance. The cars were only 605 kilos as opposed to 743 now. You know, 138 kilos is 5 seconds of lap time, if you think about it.
Wow, I
so
did not know
that's
that.
A lot. And they still had, the BMW engineers came to the test with a dyno sheet.
I'm very pleased I haven't got a face full of jam, scone and cream falling out of my mouth right now. Talking about weight.
Well, the engineers arrived with a dyno sheet for that engine, and it was 952 horsepower. So nearly 1,000 horsepower, which is pretty much what they have today, but 138 kilos lighter. It was just the sheer violence of it.
Yeah.
Plus, it's got the you know, the screaming BMW engine, the V10, 19,800 RPM. It's astonishing.
Now, none of these cars are eligible for current historic racing series. We can't speculate as to whether or not that'll change. One assumes at some point there'll be a historic racing series for these younger F1 cars. But of all of the cars you're involved with the Heritage Department, which of them do you think realistically are the sort of cars that a gentleman driver, the kind of guy that might be racing here at Goodwood this weekend, what can they comfortably get into, handle, not get themselves into trouble? Is it all of them? Is it just some of them?
To be honest, I think a paddle shift car from the mid to late 90s, so I'm talking sort of 91 to 99.
Yeah.
To be honest, the cars are, for a gentleman driver, will be pleasantly surprised. The cockpits are quite roomy. You know, they don't need to be like a teeny tiny Grand Prix driver. We can make the software make the cars quite drivable for them. And we've had clients come out to track days who've never driven a single seater, apart from, you know, I've done a day of coaching with them in an F3 car, but hardly any experience. And they've really enjoyed it. They've gone away with a big smile on their face, and they've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, fantastic. Karun, I won't take up any more of your time. You've got a plate full of sandwiches and cakes and a warm cup of tea to get to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, next up, I am joined by sports car racing royalty, Henri Pescarolo. Welcome to Goodwood, Henri. It's absolutely wonderful to see you here. For listeners who don't know, at a guess, you have competed at Le Mans probably 30 times with 4 victories, I'm guessing. Is that correct?
Yeah, 33 times and 4 victories, yes.
I wasn't far off. Okay, yeah, fantastic. Yeah. And of course, a long Formula One career behind you as well.
Yeah.
Now, you're a multi-discipline driver, sports car racing, Formula One. I believe you've competed at Dakar as well.
Yeah.
How do you find historic racing?
Oh, I like very much, but I didn't come here since about a few years now. I won the TT race 10 years ago with Patrick Tambay with the Cobra. But when I had my own team to run, you know, I didn't come back for a long time. But I had the opportunity with Motul to come today and to drive a nice E-Type Jaguar. So it's very interesting. I love that place, you know. I love the track. But I have to learn how to drive that car, because the last time I drove a car, that was in Le Mans Classic last year. It was a Pescarolo car, you know, okay. A nice prototype. So to drive E-Type Jaguar is completely different, but it's very funny, you know, I like.
So if you, forgive me, I'd forgotten that, of course, you did win the TT, the big main race here at the Revival some years ago. But the pace of development of this grid of the cars is quite intense at Goodwood. And the lap times have become much faster, even in the past few years. Yesterday's provisional pole time was a 24, I think. Well, I remember when pole was a 29. How did you find your first experience this year in terms of pace of this grid?
You know, it depends, you know, because some of the those cars are a bit different from what they were in a long time ago. So they are quicker and quicker because there is a lot of development on those cars. I have a really type Jaguar, which is exactly the same that it was a long time ago. So it's a bit slower than the front cars, you know, but anyway, it's very interesting. So when I came long time ago, it was to win. Now it's for fun.
Okay. And tell me, outside of racing, what are you up to? I seem to remember you enjoy fishing, am I right?
Fishing and shooting, yes. I'm coming very often in Ireland for shooting and fishing. Shooting in France, fishing also, so okay, yes, I'm farming too, you know, so racing is a bit far away now.
Okay, do you miss it, or is once or twice per year just the right amount of racing
for you? No, it's time now to stop, you know. The biggest problem for me was to stop my team, because it was one of the most competitive teams, you know. I nearly beat Audi 2 times with my team. And I had to stop because the regulation was stupid with a diesel engine, and that was a shame. Yeah. So now I stopped everything.
Henri, thank you very much for talking to us. I'll let you get back to your qualifying session. Lovely to see you here.
Thank you.
Collecting Cars, the safe, smart and simple way to buy and sell collectible cars. An online auction platform for the UK and Europe. Follow us on Instagram at Collecting Cars and also collectingcars.com.
The collectingcars.com podcast.
Welcome back to the Collecting Cars podcast. This weekend, we are live from Goodwood Revival. And I'm bringing you Tiffany Dell and Brennan Hartley in their pants in the men's locker room. Morning, gents.
Morning.
I'm only briefly here to ask Brendan to actually give an honest opinion of how shit Formula E cars are to drive. But as he's contracted to a major manufacturer and earning a lot of money, which is a good thing about Formula E, he probably won't admit that Formula E cars are very shit to drive.
Brennan, let's have the professional insight on how Formula E cars are to drive, maybe compared to a historic TT car today.
Have you driven one?
Yes, I drove the very first Formula E, yeah.
Okay, mate, I'm going to give a political answer, but they are actually very fun to drive. Look, you've got a lot more torque than grip.
I mean, very challenging. I appreciate it. These brilliant drivers to get the best out of them. Are they really exciting? Actually, does it get your adrenaline pumping?
So I have not driven one on a street track yet, but everyone saw me. I mean, I was testing in Mallory Park last week, and I tell you, they feel quick. I think they're doing times, you know, quicker than a Formula 3 car on a conventional circuit, but it's not...
The steering wheel, which isn't round, you have to grab another handful around the tight hairpins.
Exactly. We are sliding them around tight, you know, bumpy street tracks that are not conventional tracks. I think it's... You'd be surprised, mate. It's probably not too dissimilar to driving the Cobra here.
No, okay. I'll let him off. That was a fairly honest answer for a contracted driver. I mean, Formula, it's a great show, and it's a fantastic opportunity for drivers to earn a lot of money professionally. It's good for the teams that are running cars and manufacturers. It's just, to me, the show isn't exciting enough to watch, and the speed isn't high enough to really get a buzz going. But yeah, good luck, Brenner. Keep earning the money, Brenner. That's the main thing. Keep earning the money.
Thanks, Tiff, for completely slagging off the modern end of motor racing at the moment. So, rewinding to historic racing, that's why we're here. It is Saturday at the Revival. Brendan is about to go into second qualifying session in the TT. Mate, how do you find it getting in and out of all these different kind of cars? You're going from the fastest modern machinery, jumping into something that must feel like an old barge.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually quite nervous yesterday because, you know, I arrive here. I've never driven the car. I mean, I've done a couple laps around the track before. and you realise, oh, there's 150,000 people here watching. You're in a million-dollar car, or, you know, whatever a Cobra is worth, and they don't stop. They got a lot of power, and you are hanging them out. So it's a lot of fun. Unfortunately, we had a problem with the gearbox yesterday, so just did a couple of laps. So hopefully we're going to get that sorted for today. But it is, you know, everyone's here for the right reasons. I'd be lying if I said it doesn't get a little bit competitive, but everyone's here having fun, which I love, you know. And sometimes in modern racing, we do sometimes forget to enjoy it. And the reasons we do it are maybe a little bit different to the reasons people are here having a good time. So it's a nice feeling to be here.
And just you're a busy man this year. Just give us a quick overview of all your different programs, because I can't imagine there's many professional racers at the top flight levels of the sport that have a diary quite as intense as yours at the moment.
Yeah, and this is my weekend off, which I am having fun though. So I started off Formula E testing with Porsche. I signed with Toyota to the WEC championship in their MP1 car. I'm the Ferrari test driver for their simulator. I've been at 6 Formula 1 races as a reserve driver, and I've now signed for another Formula E team with Dragon to do their Formula E championship. So yeah, I don't have a lot of spare weekends. I'm very lucky to have a wife who's organised and looks after all my logistics, and I go where I'm told to week by week and day by day, but I'm enjoying it.
Fantastic. Thanks, Brendan. We'll let you finish getting changed. Good luck in qualifying, and thanks for talking to us. Right, I'm here in the assembly area with Darren Turner and Alex Brundle. I'm going to interview Darren, and Darren is very kindly going to interview Alex. And I'm going to start with the fact that Darren got an absolute rollicking yesterday for walking into a driver's briefing quite late. But I think he had a legitimate excuse.
When I walked in, it was like, I think there may have been some other drivers who sort of came in at the same time, because we all seemed to get the full wrath of the clerk of the course of not being in the driver's briefing at the right time. But it was more for the fact I was out on the Whitsun qualifying session. I was hot and sweaty just from driving the car. Then I was really hot and sweaty running through the paddock to get to the driver's briefing. And, unfortunately, got a bit of a bollocking off the back of it.
How many cars are you driving this weekend?
It's a little bit too many. So I've got four races, and then I'm also in the TT Celebration Parade in a
four
DBR1.
Four races and a demonstration.
I did four last year, and I said, I'm never doing four again.
Yeah.
And then you could just get asked, and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, and then suddenly you're up to four, and then when I arrived, they said, oh, can you do a parade as well? So it's a little bit too much. But anyway, it is what it is.
That is the price to pay when you're a superstar, I'm afraid.
Definitely nothing to do being like a superstar or anything.
My violin is a string short, I'm afraid. Sorry, man.
It's more to do with just gullible and just like, oh, yeah, just say yes too easy.
Yeah,
that's my problem.
Sure. And Alex, your first historic race weekend?
Yep. I agree.
you're looking wide eyes. Thanks, Darren.
Yeah, a little bit wide eyed. I mean, I'm actually jealous of him. He's gone now, so I can say that.
Yeah.
I'm actually jealous of him because he's got a lot of time on track. I've not got a lot of time on track. I had one 20-minute qualifying session yesterday, which was cut a little bit short with a gremlin. So I'm still building, shall we? I would still in the building phase, shall we say.
No, remind me, you're in a Cobra or an E-Type?
I'm in an E-Type. I'm in the Pearson Engineering E-Type.
Perfect, prepared by Gary Pearson. You couldn't ask for better than that. But I said to you yesterday, I feel really sorry for you, because I remember that day, it was a long time ago now, when I came here to the Revival and it was my first ever time in a historic car. And I too was in an E-Type in the TT. And the guy said to me, on the Thursday evening or something, look, you know, it's kind of got number plates on it. If you want to just drive it out the circuit and up the road, just go and familiarize yourself with the car. I promise you, I got about half a mile away and I nearly turned around and gave the keys back, and I didn't want to do it because I felt like the car was going to spit me into the nearest oak tree at every opportunity. And on track, it seems to move under you even when you change gears on the straight by comparison to modern machinery. So how are you finding this transition from LMP1, LMP2?
Yeah, there is that moment when you're not quite sure if you're steering it or it's steering you. And and like you say, just the sheer movement of the thing underneath you, there's a certain element of that you just got to ignore, haven't you? It took a few laps. You know, I was kind of building with the rest of the pack who were kind of discovering their cars a little bit as well, and building towards a nice crescendo. But obviously, we just cut a little bit short, means we qualified back in 16th. But to be honest, it was nice to have the night to think about it. I'll jump in now and just, you know, sort of keep building up and make sure I'm in the right place for the race. Gary has just been awesome. Yeah. I can't say enough about him. You know, he's jumping in and out of every single car in almost every single race here. And in the interim, he's busy preparing our car,
yeah.
fixing our car, and teaching me how to drive it. Just unbelievable.
Well,
unbelievable.
You couldn't ask for a better preparer. You couldn't ask for a better driver, tutor. Gary Pearson, for listeners who don't know, is an absolute god in this historic racing world, and few men know how to prepare and drive Jaguar C-types, D-types, E-types than him. Tell me, how do you find track positioning around other cars? Because I remember the thing that surprised me is just when you think you've gone up the inside, you've picked a gap, you kind of forget how much the cars waft across the road once you're parallel to another.
Yeah, you sort of got to stick to your lane, haven't you? Because every like sharp change of direction, there's just a bit of afters. So, and you've got to be prepared for that. But, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes on a racetrack, things happen in front of you. You've got to take avoiding action. I think in a car like this, you've just got to be prepared to be scooping that up for another 200 metres and hope there's not a corner within that duration. But
And are you being that predictable modern racing driver that's coming in mid-session asking your mechanics for a click stiffer on high-speed bump, only be told to bugger off by your mechanics and get on with it?
You know what? I actually came in after the first run at Silverstone and asked for exactly that. Exactly that. And then it was just like, but you know, and actually, you know, it makes a difference. It makes a difference in the cars, but this car is absolutely mint. And Gary knows exactly what he wants from it. He gets out of it, does it all by feel, and goes, "That's lovely. Thank you very much to the engineer." And so I defer to his greater knowledge in this forum. Yeah.
But of course, your dad's been here quite a few times racing at the Revival. Is he here this weekend? Has he offered you any tips or insight for this kind of transition into old cars?
Yeah, dad's not here this weekend, but we've obviously spoken through the circuit at length. I've got loads of advice. Advice is not something I'm short of, but
all of it conflicting, hopefully. Yeah.
Track time is what I'm short of. And, you know, at the end of the day, I can tell you about how to drive around here as much as I like. It's a case of getting in and just feeling it, having the confidence to, you know, really push in the high speed corners with the knowledge that if something goes a little bit wayward in the car, you can scoop it up. And there's nothing that's going to give you that feel apart from lap after lap after lap of track time.
Do you have this sort of instinct to straighten up a car that's starting to move sideways?
Yes.
Are you having to try to mentally switch that off?
Yeah, absolutely. So the car goes sideways and I'm immediately just bang on top of it as though I've got an aero platform to deal with.
Yeah.
And so it's actually allowing that to happen. And also, I've never ever, shall I tell you the biggest thing, is I've never driven a race car before where the rack stop is not within one turn of my hands.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so actually, I have to shuffle the wheel.
Yeah.
Which I have never done in a race car in my life.
Yeah.
The concept of shuffling the wheel with any kind of control
is
really, really a new thing, completely a new thing. And so I end up with my arms like the spaghetti monster, just, you know, with the car moving around. But it's all experience. And the first session went, you know, I think the team are pretty happy with how we went, so we'll just keep on building for this one.
Fantastic. Thanks, Alex.
Cheers,
best of luck.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
I'm back in the changing room, and I'm catching up with a very whiffy Tiff Nidell, who wants to stand in front of the air conditioning.
I'm not whiffy.
And
I don't really need... I'm in my new Wallaro, which is this new... I'm testing today.
Go on, Tiff. Get the sponsor plug
in. Yes, well,
go
on. There's no money involved. I'm just trying it out, and it does seem to keep me cooler.
Sumptuous Nomex underwear you seem to be wearing. What's
colour
the
to
brand?
Match my hair.
Where can I buy it?
Colour grey to match my hair. Wallaro, the
Wallaro,
way to go.
Everybody, Wallaro. So how was it? Did you get to the finish line without dents and scratches?
Yes, my lovely pink and white Vauxhall Cresta survived. Seesawed around like a huge barge, lifted its little inside wheels, spun all its power away on many occasions, but it was quite a hoot to drive. So, and I made up, started about 22nd, finished 13th. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, overtook
That's
about four at the start and then a few dropped out.
Now, all I've heard, I've been busy interviewing people and I've heard that the whole afternoon's proceedings have been delayed by about half an hour. Are you anything to do with this?
No.
Sure?
I was well at the back when I saw this gulf-coloured Volvo trying to climb the bank at No Name.
Oh, is that what it
was?
Right
where Stirling Moss went off, in fact. You know, I think you wander a bit wide going down that, as you know, that curved braking area.
No Name's the scariest corner here.
It looked like nobody pushed him. He just wandered himself wide.
It's so easy to get it wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember in a single-seater, it's sort of
flat-ish, just
he
about.
He followed the white line
in
a single-seater, but you wouldn't dare do that in
no,
these big
things. In any kind of touring car or GT car, it's so easy to run wide, and there's no runoff there whatsoever.
So tyre wall needing to be rebuilt, unfortunately. Yeah. But it was great fun after that. All the German, the French guys, the Formula E boys, they were just raving about their race. I loved to see it. I told them, back to your Formula E's now, that you've had your fun for the year.
I'm kind of annoyed about how easily they adapt to this old stuff, because I remember doing it and it was really difficult, but they seem to just hop in and be on the pace straight away.
There's a fantastic caliber of drivers, you know, but real. I think this year's more high quality drivers than ever before.
Have you got anything else today, or are you just waiting for the TT?
No, home, James, now. I want to go home and watch the end of the cricket now.
Surely,
how's the golf going?
Surely you're at the party tonight, aren't
you?
No,
I need a night off. Okay, a night off. One night off. I've got a TT tomorrow.
The TV and a bottle of red.
And also, how's Southampton doing? What's the time? Kick off.
I don't know.
You can't just be a one sport reporter. You've got to have cricket. How's the cricket going?
I don't know.
Oh, there's so much you need to keep abreast of, Sam.
All right, I'm worried about your ticker, so you need to go and find out. You need to go and figure out these scores.
Before. Cricket, Solheim Cup, so much going
on. All right,
on.
You do that. Thank you, Tiff. Good update. Right, who else is standing around in their pants in the locker room that I can collar without being deeply inappropriate? And luckily found one driver not willing to talk to me in his pants. One of the fastest guys around the circuit here, Nick Padmore. Nick, you're in how many cars this weekend?
Two.
Two, like that's yourself, quite, that, yeah, right, it yeah. is the same yep. as me, but that's fairly quiet for you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah, normally in the TT. In the TT and the E-Type. But unfortunately got replaced by David Brabham. So, yeah, that's how it goes.
I had a bit of that. Yeah. I had mine was Jochen Mass.
Should we move on?
Sorry,
they've
Sam,
done more than us, haven't
you've
they?
You've been bumped for Jochen Mass, and it's like,
David who?
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Onwards. So what are you driving this weekend?
So the Lister Nobly, which was in the Sussex Trophy, which was great fun. Never driven one before. So lots of power and no grip, which I love. The cars are moving around so much.
Yeah.
That was good. And then the Lotus 16 this morning.
How did that go? Which grid is the 16 in?
It's in the Richmond and Glover.
Richmond and Gordon. Oh, Richmond Gordon. Okay, yeah. okay.
And that was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. It was like the old karting days, but you know what was coming.
Yeah.
it was going really, really well. And then after literally the third lap, the throttle was sticking open.
I can almost hear dusty book of excuses creaking open.
Yeah, no, you'll like this.
Nick's nearly sort of thumbing through the 500 pages
Number
to see
22.
Which of the excuses he's going to land on.
So the throttle was sticking open, and I managed that for quite a long time.
And then
in the end, the throttle fully stuck open
on
the exit of Madgerick. So I'm over. Just switched it off and stopped on the run down to No Name.
So was it open on the way into the corner or only on the way out?
No, luckily on the exit of the corner.
Okay,
but Jesus.
Right. That's better than on the way in.
So I was gutted though.
Yeah.
It was moving around. It was a lot of fun, but in the day, I'm not risking the car myself, you know, and let's stop now.
What's the quickest car you've ever raced here?
It's got to be the Lola T70.
Okay.
Now that thing is so fast. 170 mile an hour down the Lavant Straight, 150 odd through Ford Water. And that's a great car.
Yeah.
Have you driven one?
No, never. I really want to.
Actually, you're a bit faster.
So
no, I don't.
Lap times in that?
I did a 117 in quali. And then never invited back. So.
I remember being very envious in one of the prize givings where I think you won a watch for the fastest lap of the meeting. Oh, he's wearing it. He's wearing it. Beautiful IWC watch.
And that is such a funny story because
it's huge, that thing.
I went to get my trophy, Claire and I, and brilliant. Yeah, over the moon.
Yeah,
so we walked off, went to go home, and a guy was pulling my jacket. I turned around, it's a guy from IWC, and said, you might want to hang around because you might get a present. And then, I got that. And it's, brilliant.
So for a lot of listeners to this podcast that might not know your name, explain how is it that you end up in this world racing this amazing variety of cars on such a regular basis?
It's like yourself, really. We worked very hard at it, haven't we? And we coached drivers and we enjoy doing that. And then the owners of these cars sometimes ask you to race them. And plus Goodwood help out massively with finding us drives. And that's how it is. You know, we jump in cars for qualifying that we've probably never really seen before.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's respect. You look after the car, you have a lot of fun, you go home.
Now, there's this huge upsurge, isn't there, in interest in Formula One cars. Now, there always has been, as long as there's been a series for pre-77 Formula One cars for historic races to participate in. But I feel like that period, that age period, is getting younger and younger. And you've been involved, I think, in testing some of these younger cars as well. So what have you been in Formula One wise recently?
I've been incredibly lucky. How long have we got? I've
blocked you from my Instagram.
I do apologize. I got a very nice phone call from Williams Heritage, and they said, you know, Karun's getting quite busy with the TV stuff, can you help out? The first car was an FW19, mm-hmm. Villeneuve's 1997 car.
The 97 car?
Yeah.
That's serious, that's proper.
Yeah, and it was amazing. So Jonathan Williams and Dickie Stanford, you're like, wow. And all I do all day is, oh, what was this like?
So Dickie Stanford is the former chief mech, isn't he? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
legend.
Incredible
worked,
guy.
Worked with everyone. You know,
yeah,
Prost,
now Nick Padmore.
Mansell, PK, Senna, name it, Montoya.
And the stories, you know, I have to keep saying, apologising, because I keep saying, I'm sorry to ask you all these questions. But, no, ask me more. And some of the stories, anyway, back to the car, was phenomenal.
Right.
Had a hand clutch, which is new for me.
Yeah.
What an experience. So there's hopefully some more of that coming up.
Do you fit in the cars all right? Because I know, you know, you are the perfect size for a racing driver, but I've been up to Williams Heritage, and I know I'm a fair bit taller than you, but those tubs are tiny, particularly of that era, that mid-90s era.
Yeah, you're right. Thank God, yes. But if I didn't, I'd still get in the
car.
Yeah,
you'd figure it out.
It's fine. Yeah, it's okay. Well, that's the right result.
And what about at home? Have you got anything in the garage?
Yeah, I have. I've obviously got my Mini Miglia that I race
with
my dad, and it's done in his retro design from sort of the 70s, 80s. And then I've got a classic Road Mini, and then I've just bought a 318 IS Road BMW just for a bit of fun, and then a couple of carts and a monkey bike and a BMX. Can't forget the BMX.
Wow, this is more than the single garage.
It's
quite the barn.
I really look for bargains, and I found, you know, and the BMX is a bit of a story, because when Dad used to race the Mini Miglia, I was always on the BMX, and there was a photo, you know, back in the day of Dad in the Miglia and me on the Rally Burner, so I just had to buy one of them.
Fantastic.
So it's quite funny, yeah.
That's great. Have you got any more driving this afternoon?
No.
You're
that's
done.
It. All done. Yeah, yeah.
Time for a beer.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That's it. Relax.
Thank you, Nick. What's your social media handle, Instagram, whatever, so people can follow you? Because you've got some incredible posts where you're driving phenomenal cars with some good onboard and stuff.
Yours is brilliant. Yeah. Mine's, I think, on Instagram, it's NPAD5056, I believe.
NPAD56.
Yeah,
all right.
And then Twitter,
anyone that wants to see historic Formula One cars driven as they were intended, go follow NPAD56 on Insta. Thanks very much, Nick.
Thank you.
Have a good afternoon. That's about all we've got time for this weekend at the Goodwood Revival. I hope you enjoy this slightly different format. For those of you that might be interested in seeing a little bit of onboard footage from some of these historic race cars and some behind-the-scenes snaps from Goodwood and some upcoming historic race weekends, by all means, follow me on Instagram at Hancock_Sam, and it's the same handle on Twitter. And for some slightly longer onboard footage, look me up on YouTube as well if you fancy. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.